Hello and welcome to the return of the Black Shoe Diaries podcast. Joining me today from SB Nation and Every Day Should Be Saturday and formerly of 11 Warriors, Luke Zimmerman. How are you, Luke?
I'm doing real well, Chris. Thanks for having me.
No problem. Luke's coming to us from D.C. He also works with our man Kevin down there, too. I wanted to talk to you about Ohio State. We're sort of, you know, all summer been batting them around and joyfully doing so, especially me, because I've been hoping to see them bombed back to the Stone Ages pretty much since Terrell Pryor committed there. And I don't feel bad about that being irrational in any sort of way. It turns out that they're not going to be nailed by the NCAA, probably. Their penalties, proposed self-imposed penalties are 2 years of probation, vacating all the 2010 wins, no scholarship losses, no bowl ban. How likely is that to be accepted by the NCAA in mid-August?
I think that, you know, by and large, that's going to be maybe, you know, not necessarily the vast majority, but certainly like 66% or maybe close to 70% of the total punishment. I suspect, based on the NCAA president Mark Emmert's comments, that, you know, that I guess folks hoping for more shouldn't consider it a closed book deal will mean that there'll be some kind of scholarship reduction. I don't know that necessarily we'll go quite even to USC extremes, where some of the classes you saw were like flirting with barely 20 and things of that nature. But I think there will be probably some additional slap on the wrist. I'm not expecting any, you know, I think that the lack of the failure to monitor and lack of institutional control pretty much seals that there won't be a bowl ban. Say what you will, and you know, certainly Penn State, Michigan fans, and really anyone else that's taken their licks in the Big Ten in the last decade is, you know, they're getting their shot in Florida and just kind of enjoying the moment. I don't fault them one bit, but you know, Ohio State did cooperate, besides, you know, kind of inadvertently spouting a lot of BS throughout the entirety of the process. So that being said, USC was kind of a lot more indignant and self-righteous, and I think that's kind of it's a total spite move on the NCAA's part, that, you know, maybe that punishment will look harsh retroactively, maybe like a 2000s equivalent of kind of what SMU got retroactively. Hiring Lane Kiffin is kind of a punishment in and of itself enough, but
it is.
You know, that being said, I think that this is maybe, you know, a slight majority of what the punishment is going to be. I'm going to agree with President Emmert. It's probably not done. I'm still, you know, I was saying all along that if there was like a one-game bowl ban just in lieu of kind of the fast one that, you know, and again, it wasn't Ohio State. Their leadership supposedly was completely willing to sit the five guys that were kind of involved with the tattoo for bartering scandal that went down last December. But, you know, obviously Jim Delaney and the bowl sponsors, and I'm sure anyone that had a piece of that pie wanted otherwise. So it's tough to say, since the NCAA was one of those parties that had, you know, I guess the vested interest in having those individuals play in the game, whether or not they'll retroactively kind of try and ride the ship. They already did, you know, not forfeit the game. That's one of the misnomers. I think at SEC Media Day last week, I was kind of helping the EDSBS crew stay on their toes down there, since they were having some tech problems. I think one of the SEC beat writer types, you know, asked Bobby Petrino about the extra win on their schedule or something ridiculous like that. It's not a forfeit when you vacate a game. It just simply never happened. But nonetheless, I think that's not really a real punishment.
I personally like the idea of asking Bobby Petrino about morals.
Yeah, right. Hey, remember when you vacated, you know, an NFL season 3/4 of the way through? How was that? No, I think that, you know, whether I think a one-game bowl ban would kind of be symmetrical to the beginning of this kind of whole scandal in terms of wrapping it up, but I'm not expecting that. I think if precedent is anything with the NCAA, you can't really tell. You know,
no.
They could do nothing, or they could say, okay, well, we're going to go ahead and do this. But I think that they do kind of factor in, and it's, you know, I see fans out there saying stuff to the effect of, like, you know, Ohio State skated, they totally got away with this, you know, they're getting away with murder here. I mean, losing probably the best coach in the school's, you know, very successful 100-year history is punishment. You know, I don't want to say in and of itself, but it's a pretty, you know, it's a pretty resounding downgrade to go from having, you know, national championship head coach, multiple BCS bowl winning head coach Jim Tressel to, you know, uber bro Luke Fickle. He certainly is not without his, I don't want to totally dismiss him. I kind of ebb and flow on him, and we'll certainly probably discuss that a little bit more in more depth, but it's a bit of a downgrade to have to, you know, go with a interim but not interim head bro instead of the vest. So,
and that is, I was going to say, just at least from my perspective, that is really the biggest punishment of all. Here is that, you know, they've basically cut the head off the snake in Trestle.
So, yeah, I mean, I think that it's going to be really interesting to see. Anyone that says they know what's going to happen is full of crap. I think that, you know, we don't know what Luke Fickell's tendencies are going to be as an offensive, you know, having, you know, input into the offensive play calling decisions and really the nature of the offense. He, you know, he gave all the generic coach speak answers that, you know, if we have to, you know, the wide receivers at Ohio State are probably the weakest unit this season, you know, with DeVere Posey out for 5 games and just kind of, I guess, with the transition of losing Dan Sanzenbacher, who was obviously their best playmaker last season. It's a pretty inexperienced group that doesn't go particularly deep. So that being said, you know, he was saying things to the effect of, we have to play, you know, three running backs back there. We'll definitely do that. And I don't believe for 1 second we're going to see like a flex bone or like Maryland Eye or anything like that. But, you know, we don't know. And the last time, you know, offensive coordinator, if you want to call him that, Jim Bowman, who's probably in Ohio State fans' eyes been like really the most heavily scrutinized coach on Trestle's staff throughout his tenure. I think people have been calling for his job since, you know, I was maybe like a sophomore or junior in college way back when. I think that we don't know what Bowman's going to be like as the principal play caller, since Trestle really did kind of monopolize that portion. And Trestle was so inconsistent. I mean, the 2006 team, you know, would go 5 wide in the red zone against Michigan, which is a very, you know, spite Trestle type move from him. But in the same light, you know, you would see the 2004 team and, you know, some of the later 2000 teams that would just be like so conservative that, you know, Woody Hayes was blushing. But it's tough to say what exactly we're going to get from Bowman. He hasn't called an offense since like the late 80s Youngstown State teams that he was kind of overseeing offensively. And I've heard from beat writer friends that I'm kind of close to from the time I spent kind of more as a primary writer at 11 Warriors. I'm still, I guess, affiliated with them as kind of like the podcast master or whatever you want to call it. And I can still probably chime in there now and then, but I'm less involved on a day-to-day basis, certainly. But some of the beat writer types I kind of, you know, made acquaintance with over my time down and covering games for them has said that Bowman is supposedly a little bit more aggressive. You know, what that means, you know, a guy that is known for coaching poor offensive lines. And I just, in general, when I think of offensive line coaches calling plays, I think of like Mike Tice and, you know, an NFL guy that just, maybe he's a good offensive line coach, but just is kind of a meathead idiot at play calling. So I don't, it's just completely, it's going to be a total roll of the dice. Maybe it's going to be a complete nightmare, you know, in Ohio State fans' eyes. It's less than losing any more than about 3 games is probably a total disaster season, but just kind of given all the scrutiny and the suspensions and, you know, I think maybe even losing Terrell Pryor might be more of an impediment than having Jim Trestle sit, because the prospect of Joe Bousman getting any meaningful amounts of snaps is probably the biggest thing causing me to lose sleep this offseason.
Yeah, and that seems to be the common sentiment among Ohio State fans that I've seen, at least. What are people overlooking about Ohio State this season? Can they get enough out of mystery QB to make another title run?
So, you know, it's going to be really interesting if this coaching staff, you know, decides that they can just kind of piss caution to the wind and go with the incoming freshman Braxton Miller from kind of the Southwest Ohio area. Miller is kind of like, at least in terms of, he's not Terrell Pryor as an athlete, but he's very athletic and he might be more advanced as a passer at the same age. He came from a probably better offensive coach high school that gives him probably a little bit more, you know, preparatory advancement for something, you know, like he's going to be stepping into. He's definitely the real deal. I think he may be a better passer now than Terrell Pryor was as a sophomore or a junior. So I think that if he can, you know, get an offense at the college level down, which is a huge if. I mean, these kids have never had the kind of, you know, attention to detail necessary and just kind of intense study hours necessary to kind of to take something like that on. If this coaching staff decides, you know, this, you know, we're not concerned with, you know, are we going to have our jobs next year? Which for a, you know, a coach that interim but not interim, you know, it's definitely a big if. It's going to be interesting because I think he has all the potential to certainly make plays with his feet and then do some interesting things through the air as well. The other guy, I guess, in the mix for the job besides Bowserman and Miller is Kenny Guyton, who was sort of like a throwaway recruit. He was like a fringe three-star guy from Houston who I think after Ohio State lost out on want to say his name was Andrew Miller, but that's, I don't think that's right. He was a wound up signing with Notre Dame, and he's their backup right now. When he kind of ruled out Ohio State, they had to scramble to get a third quarterback to back up Bowserman and Pryor after they lost some of their backups to transfer, and wound up going with really a virtually unheard of guy, even with a lot of the major scouting sites, Kenny Guyton, and he was like a 3-star, maybe even athlete. Kind of more in like the Troy Smith role where you don't know really what you're getting, but he certainly looked the part in the spring games. And also, I think he may have played A series, definitely hasn't had any meaningful action, was redshirted his first year and is going to be, really as, as green as you can expect from someone that hasn't seen the field as a starter. But he may be like the best of both worlds because he's not as athletic as Miller. Or certainly nowhere near the burner the prior was, but I think he's a little bit more polished in terms of getting the, going through his progressions and certainly kind of, doing the more Jim Tressel, the biggest thing in that offense was predicated on ball control and protecting the football. So if he can give Joe Bowserman a run for his money, and keep in mind that Joe Bowserman in his first play last season after Terrell Pryor got basically injured by Illinois' turf, Bowserman came in and threw a pick to like a defensive end.
You mean that wasn't a point shaving scandal?
Yeah, no, right.
The huge rumor on every message board possible.
Yeah, no, I think that like I'd heard that since when I was like maybe either a senior or right after I graduated from school, like back during the Troy Smith era. There that was like something that was even being heard like during his Heisman year. So I never saw any evidence. I don't think that statistically, and I'm no math guru, but I don't think any of the numbers were like odd.
No,
the weird thing is, as conservative as Tressel is, like I think for his tenure, OSU was really good against the spread.
I think you're right.
So I don't know that there's any merit in anything like that. But
no,
maybe Joe Bowserman's just one up on all of us. Maybe he had a bet that if he plays, if he throws a pick on the very first play, what was the FX boxer show with the sketchy gambler running the entire guy's career? Lights Out. Yeah.
Lights Out.
Maybe Joe Bowserman has like some benefactor out there that's like had like 1.5 million large or something on a Joe Bowserman interception.
If that's the case, I hope he's your quarterback this year.
Yeah, for certainly your listeners that are rooting for Ohio State to really regress hardcore. Joe Bowserman is who you want to root for. He's 20. I think he might be older than I am, like in his mid to late 20s, former minor league baseball player, sucked there, has for all intents and purposes sucked in college as a quarterback. So
make it happen, Shady Columbus mobsters. Make it happen.
Tattoo impresario, car dealer.
We can't get Braxton Miller some tattoos? Come on.
He's got a couple. He may even already have an Ohio State tattoo. And the funny thing is when this whole scandal broke, a friend of mine actually had I don't think it predated like when it broke, but like Pryor had this elaborate Blocko tattoo like really early in his Buckeye career. And my buddy has a couple tats and was just like, that thing would cost maybe $600 minimum. Like, where is this kid from rural Pennsylvania getting, the change to get something like that? And he'd mentioned it to me before, and then the day the stuff broke, he's like, I knew it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's just like you can't get these elaborate sleeves that are like $1,100, $1,800, and just as a student on scholarship money, it's just not going to happen.
Quickly on Braxton Miller, was he there for a spring semester, or is he just enrolling in the fall?
Yeah, he was, I think, an early enrollee, if I'm not mistaken, and he had that to his advantage. He played in the spring game, and I think I made a joke earlier today with some coworkers that I was in Columbus during the albeit brief Brady Quinn Cleveland Browns era, and I remember going to like a not really a party but like a social excuse to drink mixed group of like 20 people at this house, and it was like the Browns' third preseason game, and Quinn made his first appearance, and like some guy was like getting choked up when Brady Quinn led a touchdown drive. It was sort of that thing with. Miller like had a touchdown drive in the weird abbreviated spring game. Ohio State's offensive line was just so banged up and depleted in the spring game that they played one of those like NCAA 12 style like mini games where there was like no it was like points for first downs and things like that. So they had to play a true spring game, but Miller led like a touchdown drive I think kind of early on in the second half, and you know, there's I'm sure people on the like 11 Warriors and then on SBN on along the Illinois tangent just probably like weeping like this is the guy, you know, whether that's going to be the case or not, you know, come this fall, I should mention to see. But yeah, certainly there's good precedent for the guys that get that extra, you know, 4 or 5 months worth of work and time to kind of get acclimated. I think the biggest shock, you know, to these student athletes is just kind of balancing their time. And I know their time and their schedule is very regimented, and you know, they have all the every varsity athlete has tutors that, you know. You know, this is what you need to study, this is what you need to read, you know, this is what you need to do for this class, what you need to do for this class. They have all that, but still, like, coming from high school where it's, you know, you're the man and your classes are, you know, remedial middle school level or something like that, to going to, like, a major university, even with an athlete's workload, is definitely probably the biggest, you know, culture shock to them.
Will Luke Fickell debut some Affliction formal wear for Big Ten Media Days or double down by ripping the sleeves off his existing t-shirts?
Yeah, that would be great. It would also be awesome if he, like, wore a sloppy button-up shirt with, like, a loose tie, kind of like like a Woody Hayes sort of figure. He's already said that he's not. There's this kind of big, and I hate these, but, you know, the coordinated Facebook fashion movements where, like, everyone's going to wear a sweater vest to the opening game. Like, if anyone has fans are listening, like, don't do that. Like, be better than that. You don't need to commit to this. But nonetheless, someone asked Fickell if he was going to partake or participate in that, rather. And he said, you know, the sweater vest was sacred in his mind, and he would never wear one as an Ohio State assistant. But I think there are some photos, if you know, Google image search or check out the Getty or AP Wire, of him out there as an assistant wearing like a sweater vest like attire. Sadly, I don't know if he's going to have, you know, like Jesus Didn't Tap Out or anything like that in store. It certainly would kind of fit his bro persona.
I'm hoping he can give Joe Paterno some fashion tips.
Yeah, that would be great.
Class him up a little bit.
Yeah, that's the sad thing is, like, I wonder if Joe Pa really like grasps the magnitude of the situation, because I know he was like, he always called Jim Tressel Little Jimmy and would always talk like glowingly about the time that he took an 11-year-old Jim Tressel camping.
Yeah, if he pulls that crap with Luke Fickell, he's going to end up in a triangle choke.
Yeah, it's going to be like, you know, it's going to be complete UFC style. And the thing is, like, Joe Pa's jiu-jitsu is mad underrated, so.
It's true.
You know, he better watch out, certainly.
And finally, Queef Corps. For those who are unfamiliar in our audience, briefly explain it, and your best possible example of the Queef Corps genre.
Yeah, so Spencer Hall, EDSBS, where I've been kind of spending more of my writing time when I'm not kind of doing tech stuff for SBN, he sent me an IM one day when I was, you know, still working in the software game back in Austin, Texas, like, hey, I need you to name this genre of music. Think Train, Three Doors Down, Semisonic, you know, Matchbox 20, Fuel, Hoobastank. I was like, just Queefcore. And it's
so clear.
Like, and you know, all impulse aside, you know, he certainly knew that he was talking to somebody that kind of grew up in that era of music. Like, that was my middle school and high school glory days. And I certainly, you know, I would say I have a very varied palette in terms of music. I definitely like prefer, you know, more like indie and hip hop and stuff like that these days, but I still like kind of hold myself as like a scholar of just that genre of, you know, intentionally self-indulgent bad music. And so, you know, I'm prone to,
you had, you know, no choice but to absorb it.
Yeah. I just, you know, history, you know, the, here in DC, I don't live too far from, like, you know, the archives, and someday they're going to ask me to go in there and just, you know, when I'm retired from the sports blog game, and just, I'm going to have to document this for, you know, posterity's sake. So in 500 years, they can go back and like really study what it was all about. But no, it's essentially Queef Corps. Also, I think Spin Magazine in 1994 called it Scrunge, which means like better than Ezra is scrunging for their next number one hit. So that might be like the PC term, because Queef certainly, you know, gives a nasty taste to the more sensitive folks out there. But, you know, it's like Drops of Jupiter. It's just like this, like, it's not like, you know, Train, you know, Pat Monahan, the front, I mean, he knows what he's doing. It's not like,
sure,
he's naive and thinking that he's making like the next Allman Brothers record.
He's selling records.
Yeah, he's getting money and, you know, writing music. Like, he has a song on there, like, their latest album may be, like, the most Queefcore, but not even, like, in a, like, you know, at least Drops of Jupiter, you know, there's a lot of elements to it where, like, if you took a Berklee songwriting class, those guys would say, okay, you know, it has this flow and it has, like, this songwriting characteristic where, you know, there's some merits to it. Like, he has a song called Marry Me, which is like if Gossip Girl was a song. It's just like it's so. It's just bros being bros for the sake of like. I don't know who. I think it was a Film Drunk on Twitter today, or maybe yesterday, wrote something like, "I think certain people make music for certain types of chicks that really truly believe that it's magic." Like, mm-hmm. they don't understand how music works, so, like, they just think that it's, like, witchcraft, and they're just so into dudes that make music like that. That's basically, like, the Creepcore MO. Like, can I make this sensitive bro rock that's gonna make chicks think that I'm a magician? Like, Rob Thomas, someone asked me on Twitter last night if, what the best Creepcore song is, which is kind of a loaded question, but, you know, at least in terms of, like, maybe the most Creepcore, Rob Thomas has, like, a monopoly on
it. Yeah, Rob Thomas is pretty much the Mick Jagger of Creepcore.
Oh, absolutely. Spencer Hall sent me a YouTube video a while back, earlier this summer, where Rob Thomas performed a live Creepcore version of David Bowie's Let's Dance.
Oh, God.
And it's just like, it was everything you can hope and more, you know? That's really what the Creepcore movement is all about. It's about Rob Thomas, you know, someone paying $85 to see Rob Thomas, you know, perform in a college arena. That's you know, that, and then also all the artists that were in their heyday, like Collective Soul and you know, bands of that nature. They're all playing like county fairs.
Yeah, Collective Soul sort of bridged the grunge Creepcore eras.
You know, they had like Shine early on, which was like kind of Christian grunge, and then they wound up making like that one. If you were basically on a and there's kind of a Creepcore genre of movies. I don't really know what to call that yet. But, like, if Kevin Williamson, the guy that did Dawson's Creek and The Faculty, if he was involved in your movie, it was probably a Creepcore movie. Like, Varsity Blues. If you were in any of his products, too, and you made a movie, Killing Mrs. Tingle. Like, all those movies have these, like, ridiculous Creepcore. All the American Pies have these ridiculous Creepcore songs. And Collective Soul had, like, Run, which was, like, a Creepcore song on a Creepcore movie. And it just... You know, man, the 90s was something really special. So,
Luke Zimmerman, Every Day Should Be Saturday, SBNation.com, 11 Warriors, Luke Zim on Twitter. Go follow him right now. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure, Chris.
And as a tribute to our esteemed guest, let's play him out with some Creepcore. Thanks for joining us, everybody.
Pass the road to your house where you never call home. When they turned out your lights, though they say you'll never know. I remember running through the wet grass, falling asleep behind. Both of us never tiring, desperately wanted. When they pumped out your guts, filled you full of those pills.